to the moon. I just want to start out by saying my name is Melissa. I'm a grateful recovered compulsive eater and a grateful recovered Al-Anon. And BBA is at the heart of the reason I'm recovered today. I was asked to speak today specifically on column 3 and the realization, which is a combination of meeting 14 and 15 for those who are in a workshop. And, you know, we first get direction about how to approach and complete this part of our fourth step around the very last part of page 63 and page 64, 65, and 66. And then we kind of begin to get out of it into 67, although the realization is first made plain to us at the bottom of 66. So if you want to follow along in your big book today, those are the areas I'm going to be kind of referencing. And I normally speak for 50 minutes to 90 minutes, sometimes 2 hours on this. It's really significant, but we're not going to do that today. I'm going to nutshell it to you. And I want to let you know that, you know, this is what I'm sharing today is how I was brought through this work by the women who originally translated it from drugs and alcohol to food addiction and codependency. You know, I came into BBA rooms in 2015 in San Diego, California at the Del Mar Thursday night home group. It used to be the Monday night home group. We moved rooms a couple times. And the people in that meeting are the ones who loved me and helped me and listened to me, but also showed me a way out of the story that I had so carefully groomed and was living my life by that was causing so much misery and so much addiction. And that, you know, I'm just going to share that way of how I came through. The first thing I wanted to mention is that, you know, what became very apparent to me through spending time with people who had recovered in Big Book Awakening was that picking up and acting out in my addiction or compulsions came from a place of being separate and disconnected from spiritual living, from God, from a spiritual life. And this was, even though I had years in recovery in either program, by the time I got here, I was kind of spiritually dying inside and I didn't know why. And what I found was for the first time, the language around, you know, I'm a physical person living in a spiritual world. And there are a lot of opportunities for me to disconnect from my spiritual self when I'm doing that. And if I'm not trained in the art of how to live a spiritual life, I'm likely not going to live one. So up until this point in our work, we spend weeks at a time in Big Book Awakening showing in the book where it talks about, do I self-qualify as someone who must live a spiritual life or else go into the depths of insanity or depression or addiction? And so it's weeks. We're talking 3 months by the time we get to this part of the work. And we're usually clear on the fact that a spiritual life might be my last house on the block. And so we come into the work in the pages that I talked about in the book, and we're kind of in agreement. Okay, I'm ready to accept that I need to live a spiritual life if I want to have any hope of, you know, not dying either spiritually or physically. So it starts on the bottom of 63 and it says, we launched on a course of vigorous action, which for many of us, you know, we could do for short periods of time, like diets or self-help books or other guru related things. But we spent a lot more time in our head and running our mouth than we did actually moving our feet. And so BBA kind of puts an end to that right here, where, we're really going to step into some vigorous housekeeping in areas that we may have never visited before. So, you know, the God that I go into this work with is not the same God that I come out with in step 11. That's why in our third step prayer, we don't have an amen at the end. That third step prayer kind of carries us in grace through our entire fourth step, all the way through our seventh step. And, you know, I really needed to be carried in grace through this work. Prior to coming to Big Book Awakening, I really believed that a fourth step was to find out who I am and what my defects of character are and how I'm going to start controlling them, getting rid of them, eradicating them from my life. And no wonder I was spiritually dying, because it was completely upside down on what the book says. You know, here I found out, I learned through the grace of some of the women who are even in this call today, I do inventory to find out who I am not. Remembering that my picking up and acting out comes from a place of being disconnected from God or from a spiritual life. What I come to learn is that the purpose of this fourth step is to see where I am blocked. Where have I become blocked from my natural state of wellness, from my natural state of being? And so it kind of warns us at the beginning of 64, it's kind of a warning and a promise. I need to face and be rid of these things that have been blocking me, or else anything I do in the rest of my step work or in the rest of my life is going to have little permanent effect. It's very common in meetings to hear, you know, I work this BBA is a process of working the 12 steps that leads me to a spiritual awakening. And that spiritual awakening leads me to the power that is God. There's really kind of like a parlay or a bridge in that process. And I only get to get and stay abstinent from my addictions based on this paragraph. If I don't at once follow a strenuous effort to face these unpleasant things that I find, I might get abstinent from them for a short period of time. I may be able to abstain from acting out and picking up in whatever I've got going on for a short period of time, but not really for good and for all. And so we had to get down to causes and conditions, right? And so what the book's referring to at the top of 64 is really surface causes, right? So which starts out as column 2. Right now we're just in the surface causes. And later in the fourth step, we're going to see our root causes. And the third column begins to set up the truth of the fourth column. You know, this is very much unlike therapy, the whole facing and be rid of. So we're really not, I mean, I think therapy is valuable and has supported me in many ways. You know, most addiction and alcoholism is rooted in trauma. And if you're not doing trauma recovery, you're not reading about trauma recovery. In addition to this, at some point in your recovery, you might be missing something. So definitely, you know, I want you to explore whatever you feel supported in. But unlike therapy, we're facing and being rid of this. So we're not looking at good or bad. We're not assigning a moral value to what we find in the third column. And we're not judging what we find. We're really approaching this from a process of, is this something that sickens my spirit? Or is this something that helps my spirit get well? That is how I was guided to look at that. And as I write down my truths in my third column and in my fourth column, I'm really asking myself and I'm looking for, where can I grow spiritually? Where is my spirit sickened and where can I grow spiritually? Because oftentimes, even getting through column two for newcomers can be really difficult. And it was for me. I had to rewrite my fourth step at least once or twice before I actually got to my fifth step. There was so much wreckage going on in my head. So today, when I write inventory, I try to stick in column two, I try to stick to just three words, try to sum it up in a couple adjectives, or, you know, adjectives, adverbs, actions, like shunned me, you know, is insecure, interrupts me, you know, ignores me. I try, you know, the whole story in the beginning, I really wanted to write my whole story in column two. And, you know, what the women guided me to do and what I learned to guide with today is that God knows the story. He knows the story. I don't need to write my story in my inventory, multiple sentences. I really just need to sum up in three words or less the root of the harm. And then that helps me get a really clean third column. And if you talk to anyone who's completed this process, you'll find that having a clean third column and having an accurate fourth column is paramount to experiencing a lot of freedom in steps 5 through 12. So when the book tells me in the middle of the reading, you know, what is it worth holding on to my resentments? What is the value of my resentments? I got to get honest. You know, if I'm doing the third column and my answers, if it doesn't hurt a little bit to write it down, I'm probably not getting to my truth. I'm probably finding ease and comfort in writing my story where I maintain the victimhood and the other person maintains the perpetratorhood. You know, if I'm looking at self-seeking, selfish, dishonest, and afraid, I'm looking at the fourth column. But here, what we're looking at is the thing that kind of even comes before that. You know, we hear a lot of talk about the fourth column, but first we need to put the horse and then the cart. So in the third column, we're looking at the self-esteem, the pride, the ambition, the security, the personal relations, the sex relations, and the pocketbook. You know, our book tells us in 64 and 65, these are the things, particularly at the bottom of 64, these are the things that, you know, we ask ourselves why we're angry. And we found that it was because one of these areas were either hurt or threatened, right? Our security or our pride, hurt or threatened. So then we have to look at that. You know, we're really digging down from the roots. We can start out at the leaves. You know, I consider column two, the leaves of the tree. I consider column three, the branches of the tree. I consider the realization, kind of the trunk of the tree. And I consider the roots, column four, ending with the last thing on column four. And so we have a common expression in BBA, and we say, we need to pull this out root and branch. That was nothing I had ever heard before coming here. So that really interested me. And one of the things I experienced when I went through this work is that self-esteem, pride, ambition, security, personal relations, sex relations, and pocketbook, those are not bad things. Those are the things that I lost in my addiction, in my compulsion. And this work is here to help me get them back. These are the areas that were sickened, and the work is helping me to get them well again. So in the self-esteem statement with the I am, you know, we have to say this from a really, like I say, my ire is really up. My ego is El fuego, like I am on fire, because this is when I'm using anger to feel powerful. And that's a value that comes out quite a bit in my work. And so, you know, when the book asks, what is the value of this? What is the worth? That's in the middle of 64. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he can't fool himself about values. So I have to say, what is the value of holding on to this resentment? Because if it didn't have value, I wouldn't still have it. So sometimes, you know, the value is, you know, my resentment allows me to feel anger, which is like a very cheap way of feeling powerful for a short period of time. And it's also a delusion. I actually have no real power. It's like a substitute for God's power. Sometimes it's so I can feel superior. Sometimes so it's I can play small. No one expects anything.
5 minutes, Melissa.
Thank you. And then one of the things that comes up a lot in the work is sex relations, a deep-seated belief of how real men and women are supposed to be. You know, this is really what I write about myself, not about the person in column two. So however I identify is what I write in here. I identify as she and her. So I would say a real woman, you know, would be respected. A real woman could keep her man. A real woman, you know, would know what to do. A real woman would be an effective leader. I have different, it's sort of like my false beliefs of how I blame this resentment on myself completely and say, I deserve what's happening, whether I really deserve it or not. I wanted to end with the realization, you know, I really have no business trying to hold people to my unrealistic expectations. I cannot even hold myself to them. That's what the realization shows me. I too have done these things to others. I have caused harm and thought little of it after. In the later steps, this section helps shape my amends list. But sometimes people come to me and they say, how do I do a realization on abuse, like being raped or hurt as a child? And we do not write realization on abuse that we suffered at the hands of others unless we too have perpetrated that abuse on still others. So if I have been raped, I don't write a realization unless I have raped others. I then complete my fourth column, keeping the question in mind, what is the value in keeping this resentment alive? I frame that lens. Because sometimes the answers that I find are very valid and important, such as I never want to forget or forgive this, lest it should happen again. You know, holding on to this resentment enables me to see how I'm taking the blame for the perpetrator, or I'm under the delusion that I had any control over being raped or hit as a child or, you know, whatever to begin with. And this begins to reveal how my spirit is blocked. Because of course, there's no ownership for a child who's been abused. There's no ownership for a woman who's been raped. But what I can tell you, being on the other side of this work and the other side of these atrocities, is that in my new life that I have now with God as this sort of my spiritual father and my director, I found that it's really only God that keeps me safe. And beyond God, there is human will. And sometimes bad things happen to good people, but I will never control it. I'm not meant to. I can be honest in my inventory about what I've abandoned, when I've abandoned my sense of self, or what when I ignored my intuition, I might have put myself in a position to be harmed. If there's something like that, I can own that. I can look at how my soul was blocked from God and how that can make me more vulnerable to both harm and be harmed by people. I can look at that. But if some harm should come my way, God sends me today all the people, places, and things I could need, not only to survive it, but to thrive. And speaking as a survivor of some of these things, I can tell you that thriving has been my exact experience on the other side of this work. So when I think of the word empowered today, I think of being powered by God and the healing that he has brought into my heart. I don't need to fear harm coming my way today. Today, I know I can do difficult things, and difficult things do not break me. When I'm God reliant, I tap into the power of God, which is limitless. I don't need to see harm coming down the pike, nor do I need to fear surviving it should it occur. So today, what I have is an all-seeing, all-knowing God. And when I rely upon him, I have a joyful life beyond anything I could imagine. And my work in this column is to be honest so I can remain unblocked and have that connection. Thanks for letting me share.